very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King, 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 king now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
turn.
Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plan.
He's one,
but
your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria Podcast. My name's Bubby. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitTenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And with me, as always, is somebody who's like a chain I gotta drag up from the bottom of the lake. It's Catfish. Catfish, how you doing?
Well, I'm feeling chilly, but I do like my new blue eyes.
Oh, man. Yeah, those contacts with your blue eyes make you look great. Everybody, we are going to be covering Game of Thrones, Season 7, Episode 6, Beyond the Wall.
Oof, we certainly were.
We were. Normally, we start off with rankings. We're going to get to that in 1 second. But there are a couple of double L's.
Double L's?
Loyal listeners.
Right.
Who we want to give a special shout out to. Now, Catfish, what did Dad Z, a great double L, tweet out this week?
Dad Z said, had surgery yesterday for colon cancer.
Oh, man.
Everything seems good. You guys have been a blessing. Keeping mind focused on happier things. Thanks for all you do. Dad Z, yeah, we are having good thoughts for you.
We're sending Joffrey there to give you some good bedside manner.
Oh, yeah. He's good. He's good in the bedroom.
We also have a great double L, Peter from Australia, who has been having some health issues. He is a great Game of Thrones fan. Both he and Dad Z follow them on Twitter. Dad Z is at Dad Z E-E, at Dad Z. And Peter, I believe, is at Kremen2. He is. They're both great Game of Thrones fans. Follow them and also send them the best wishes because they are two great people we like to do this podcast for. We also want to give some shout-outs to people who are kind enough to give us written iTunes reviews. In the past, we used to say, hey, if you'd give us a written iTunes review, you'd be entered in the contest. We have a fun new contest for Season 7 that doesn't revolve around iTunes reviews, but we got these two nice ones, so we wanted to give them a shout-out, and thanks for doing it. What was the first one, Catfish?
You know, what's even nicer is, like Joffrey, they're unselfish because they get nothing out of this now.
Nothing.
So they're leaving
zilch
reviews for us. We appreciate it. The first one is by the D&D Podcast.
Ooh.
The title is By His Grace's Grace, 5 stars.
Aw, thank you.
He says, I'm a double L.
Double L?
Loyal listener.
Oh.
And this is one of my double Ps.
Double Ps?
Preferred podcasts.
Uh-huh.
If you like these guys, and you will. Then check out some of their other podcasts.
Let's not assume.
On Jonathan Strange, Twin Peaks, etc.
Oh,
Chad,
yeah,
from the Duke and Duchess Podcast. Oh, it's the Duke and Duchess Podcast.
Yeah,
I assumed it was the Dungeons and Dragons.
Do you know what they're covering on the Duke and Duchess Podcast?
What are they covering?
They're covering that great book series by Patrick Rothfuss, The Kingkiller Chronicles, which was the name of the wind.
Yeah.
And like George R. R. Martin, it's not a complete series.
Well, I was going to say that you called, and I'm not sure if you can call it a book series yet.
Well, there are two. There are two out so far. The first two out.
Right. There's only supposed to be three, yet there seems like there's so much more to cover in the third book.
Oh, boy. Patrick Rothfuss, famous fantasy writer, is really copying George R. R. Martin a bit.
He really is.
We also got another great iTunes review, Catfish. This is also from the USA iTunes Store. What did they have to say?
This is by Endless Mike 03.
Oh, he's
great. I came for the Joffrey. I stayed for the great content.
Aw.
He says, I originally started to listen to this podcast because I was tired of all the slander and lies from other crooked podcasts about King Joffrey.
Yeah, terrible.
But then after King Joffrey faked his own death to find the real usurpies.
Usurpies. That's the young ones, the younglings who are trying to usurp.
They are. The real usurpees and usurpers.
Oh.
I worried that Bubba and Catfish wouldn't have anything else to add about Game of Thrones. Boy, was I wrong. These guys do an amazing job with all previews and recaps, give great insight and opinions, and always make me laugh. They know their Game of Thrones, including all the books, and even have access to exclusive preview and Joffrey POV chapters that you won't find anywhere else. They might be rich Hollywood celebrities.
Yep.
Or they may not.
Hey.
But like true philanthropists, they share the wealth by giving away prizes too, which we do indeed, Bubba.
We do. So, for Season 7, we've been giving away one prize for every new episode of Game of Thrones.
These have been some great prizes.
And today, we're giving away an autographed copy of George R. Martin's Fever Dream. This is not part of A Song of Ice and Fire, but it is autographed by our man, George R. R. Martin. And so we're going to be giving this away.
But when you finish it, you'll be done.
Right. As soon as I'm done reading it. Right. No. Autograph.
No, but
by...
I mean, when you finish Fever Dream, you'll be like, oh, that was a complete story.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Sorry. I thought you meant after, we'll give it away after I finish reading it. I was like, oh, that seems a bit odd. I could do that. Sure.
It seems mean, but okay.
So how did people enter this contest? All you had to do was when we tweet out a new link to the Jafria podcast, you retweet that. You're entered into the contest. Once again, I'm at Fit and Trim, FitenTrim on Twitter.
And I am Catfish at CJGman67 on Twitter. There's another way that you can do it.
That's exactly
I don't know
right.
Did you know that, Bubba?
No.
That if you, we also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/doublepodcast, the word double, the letter P, and then the word podcasts. Plural.
So it rolls off the tongue.
It really does. It's so easy to type. Bookmark it later on quickly. If you like the post or share the post when we post on there about dropping the podcast episode, you'll be entering the contest. Also, if you like the Double P podcast page, you'll also be
that's
entered
a third
in the contest.
Entry.
So you can have up to three entries in this contest.
Well, that's kind of funny. The way I've been doing it is you can have up to three entries kind of a week. So then the next week when we retweet it or re-Facebook it,
wow.
And if you share that Facebook post. So many, some people in
that's
here
the way to do
have
it.
Their name multiple times. All right, so we've been talking a lot. We haven't been talking about this episode. So let's end our pregame discussion by pulling somebody to win this autograph.
And then we'll get right into it. This
novel.
Week's winner,
who is
a signed copy of Fever Dream by George R. R. Martin is... No, it's the Aria of Susans at Barbasu.
Oh, the Aria of Susans. Oh, she is great. I think... She's really going to enjoy this novel, but I'm worried she might have already read it because she's a good George R. R. Martin
But
fan.
However,
yeah,
does she have a signed copy of
it? Oh, that's a good call. That's a good call. Go to our Facebook page and leave us a mailing address, and we will mail it out in 1 week's time. Congratulations. So
I love our new double L's.
Double L's.
Loyal listeners.
Yeah.
But also, I like our classic, the ones that have been with Joffrey since the beginning. I don't want to say with us. They've been with Joffrey since
the beginning. They've been with Joffrey since the beginning of time. Next week, for the final episode of Season 7, we're going to be giving away a signed copy of A Game of Thrones by George R. R. Martin.
Woo!
Woo! So, once again, you want to get in, just retweet our tweets, share our Facebook post, like the Facebook page. That's three ways you can get in this week. We are very excited, but we've talked way too long on an episode that I think is really going to blow up the internet. We are talking about Game of Thrones Season 7, Episode 6, Beyond the Wall. Catfish, we've delayed for a bit. What is your ranking out of 10?
Bubba, I really struggled with this, and I am going to have to give it 7.
7?
What I like to call double Ds.
Double Ds?
Yeah, dragging down.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
7 out of 10, that is your lowest ranking for Season 7? This is the penultimate episode for Season 7. This
usually
is the one everybody's
have,
looking for.
Right. It has all the action. All the action. All right. So, Bubba, what about you? What ranking did you give it?
Catfish, you gave it your lowest ranking for the season.
I did indeed.
And so I'm also going to give this episode my lowest ranking of an episode this season.
And what is that?
I hate to say it because I don't give this out too often. I'm going to give this episode 6. Double J's out of 10.
Double J's?
Well, double J's, a lot of times you find it every time the Summer Olympic Games come up. It's what we call a javelin jerk. The Night King threw his javelin and like a jerk, killed one of our sweet dragons.
I wouldn't say he killed them. I would say...
Well, he
transmogrified them. That's one of my favorite vocabulary words. The dragon has been transmogrified.
This episode 6... this episode 6, which I'm giving a 6, just something felt off about it the entire way through. Last week, I pointed out a lot of issues I had with the episode, but I still was able to enjoy it, and it gave last week's episode a 8 out of 10. This week's episode, maybe something's happening, and hopefully, listeners, hopefully you disagree with us. I want everybody listening to this to have loved this episode, given it 10 out of 10. Amen, 7 hells yes, I want you to have loved it. For me, last week, it felt like if they had spread those kind of situations out over 2 weeks and really give them time to develop, it would have felt more natural. This week, the Arya-Sansa relationship, I haven't felt it's developed organically. The Let's send a raven back hundreds of miles to Dragonstone. Danny gets it, then flies hundreds of miles north and finds us and saves us. There were little things. This is, and I'm going to mention this beginning point right here at the top.
Okay.
So they get a moment I loved in this episode was when Winnie the Pooh got his revenge. When Yogi said, picnic basket, kill. No, I love the bear attack. I thought that was a great moment.
That was cool.
I was like, oh my God, that's so great. If our buddies beyond the wall had at that moment said, okay, this is crazy. Gendry, go send a letter to Daenerys that this is crazy. I could have accepted that, okay, Gendry left for the wall a couple days before they ran into all the White Walkers. He got the letter back to Daenerys. Daenerys flew up and saved them. I could have accepted that. But the fact that Gendry left right when they finally captured the White Walker, how many days do you think we were supposed to believe they were on that island? Just a day? Or?
Well, they couldn't have lasted that long. I mean, I suppose the dragons can fly fast, but Gendry would have taken him a long time to get back.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm with you. There were a couple things where, and let's be clear about this, too, is that there are a lot of problems that I have had with the books.
Oh, yeah. You constantly mention your issues with the fourth and fifth book
right.
in The Song of Ice
and
Fire.
And we have disagreements about, I have liked the way the show has handled things, has kind of moved things around, has dropped some things.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it makes it clear and a better through line. And this is the first time where I felt like, ooh, I think the show may have lost its way.
Yeah, that's tough. Once again, we hope, listeners, that you love this episode. There were moments in this episode that we loved that I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to go deeper on this blue-eyed bear attack that I really loved. But there was something about this, and this is so heartbreaking. This episode was directed by Alan Taylor. Alan Taylor directed my favorite episode ever of Game of Thrones when he directed Season 1, Episode 9, Baylor. The episode which had a lot of great stuff in the beginning of it, but also ended with the benetting. And that was a great episode. Alan Taylor was around for Season 2 and in Season 3, and his episodes, the material just wasn't as good. In this episode, there was something in the directing, the pacing, something in this just didn't work for me. And so I hate to call out Alan Taylor, because this is really a show by Dan and Dave, the executive producers. There were great moments in this, but so many moments where I wasn't emotionally engaged.
Okay, I feel like the show, I'm worried the show's lost its way. It doesn't have anything to do with the directing. It has to do with the writing. For example, I kind of loved that first scene between Sansa and Arya.
Yeah,
I felt like they were both justified.
Good point.
And then that second scene I just thought was just a really, or maybe it was the third scene. The last scene they had, I thought, whoa, this is just really upping the stakes. And again, I'd like to hear if I'm wrong. I don't know whether it's just, we do this podcast right afterwards.
Yeah,
immediate reaction. We don't have a chance to sit down with it. So that's kind of why I gave it the 7 rather than something lower, because I feel like, is it just because my expectations have been upended? I mean, I had the problem with the Deus Ex Dragina, which we've had before.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's kind of an overused trope at this point, and especially when it's as unbelievable as it was tonight. That makes it really difficult to kind of make up for it by what they did, by killing a dragon, and, you know, now it's going to be a double D.
Double D.
Dead dragon. presumably.
Right. Well, you know what? They call the zombies whites, W-I-G-H-T.
Right.
But because this is a dragon, I'm going to call it a Dwight.
Dwight. Okay, the Dwight. I love it. That's just as good as Fireable Offense from last week. The Dwight. We'll call it the Dwight from now on. So I don't know whether it's just because things are happening I don't want to happen.
That's a good call.
It's their to change things up and to, you know, if everything happened that I wanted to happen, it wouldn't even be able to go another 6 episodes after tonight. So I understand adding the extra drama. Things just between Dwight and the last Sansa Arya scene, it just felt like a bridge too far for me.
All right, well, let's get to it. And why don't we start in Winterfell rather than our Beyond the Wall? because it does begin very good. It begins, in a way, building off last week's episode. Arya is recounting a time when her father, and this is a bit interesting, her father, Ned, we saw him in season one, hire Cirio Pharrell, the Bravosi water dancer, to teach her fencing. So we know Ned Stark did encourage these things, even if, quote-unquote, it wasn't the ladylike thing to do.
Well, and this is a flashback for me right back to episode number one.
Right, but
when
the story,
the boys are shooting.
Right, sorry.
And Bran keeps missing. Arya runs away from the embroidery while Sansa's doing it, and then she shoots a bullseye right through the center. Sorry, that's what a bullseye is, so that's redundant. And so I would kind of flash back to the first episode, so that's cool.
That's true, but this story she's telling is kind of how did I get so good to hit the bullseye. And so I like this moment. I understand the motivation they're trying to give to each character. And Arya gets in a totally wonderful burn when she's like, let's pull up little Lady Lyanna Mormont. Let's see if she would have cowered and sent that note so simply.
Right, but
I thought that was a great
But
note.
Then Sansa gets in a good dig, too. She says, oh, you were there and watched it? So what did you do?
Yeah.
She didn't do anything either. I feel like they both make good points, and they refuse to listen to each other. I was okay with it in this scene. I was also glad that the pace of the season made it so that there wouldn't be scurrying around. Basically, she got the note last episode, and then the beginning of this episode is, so what about this note? I mean, I appreciate that part of it, mm-hmm. so that there's no misunderstanding about what's going on. The fact that there's still such anger and lack of understanding between the two of them is...
Where's Bran? Bran, roll yourself away from the tree. You see this happening. You see everything happening, Bran. Just cut this off in its tracks.
Let me tell you what I saw. Yeah, and he could end the show next episode. Bran could, if he would just talk to somebody.
Right.
Bran, just talk to somebody, bro.
You could still be a jerk, Bran. I'm not bad with you being a jerk. Just do it. I really, really enjoy the Sansa other quote unquote good point, where she says, hey, you know what? Jon Snow lost the Battle of the Bastards. I won it. She should take some pride. Now, the big question is that have you always thought that this was in Sansa? Sansa has been so nice to Jon in the episode after the Battle of the Bastards, and at times even this season when she's not showing him up at meetings, that it's hard for me to see this outburst having built from something other than we need to have these two fighting. And I want to say that I honestly think this could happen in the books. In that Arya episode, so if you go back to Baylor, my favorite episode directed by Alan Taylor, tonight's director, the shot of Sansa when we first see her at the Benetting, she is kind of smiling because she thinks she's gotten her dad off, like her dad's going to go to the wall, and she's won.
Right.
And Arya, I believe, saw that. And I honestly think in that chapter in the first book of Game of Thrones, Arya notices that as well. Arya seems to be even further back in the book, but I think that might be true. And I could see this being a fight happening in the books. You've just got to build to it better. I think if you had yet one more episode to really, you know, really have the grind, like maybe even before Arya really starts getting pissed, just see them, you know, acting friendly, and then suddenly their natural yin and yang tendencies causing strife between them, and then Littlefinger plants the note. It could have worked for me. Right now, it just feels too harsh of a turn.
It does feel very strong. The only thing I'll say is that Sansa is continuing the relationships that she had in happier times. She always looked up to Jon. She liked Jon, and she was always battling with Arya. Remember, Arya got her face dirty again. I keep mentioning episode one because I started rewatching some of the earlier episodes,
mm-hmm.
and so they had that fight. This wasn't like, you know, kind of brothers who fight and love each other. There was some real animus between them.
Oh yeah,
and so time has not softened that, and yet I still feel like there should be that bond of family, and maybe they could hear each other a little bit.
That's why Bran's got to roll up. Roll up on Bran and tell the truth. once again, I think a part of this is this isn't what we want. This isn't – so many fans of Game of Thrones have been looking forward to this Stark reunion. And for it to really only last a episode, mm-hmm. like one episode of, hey, they're back together, everything's groovy, it's tough to now see it like this.
This scene, this scene I didn't mind.
This first
because,
one.
Right. Yeah, right. Because they both have their points. And, you know, with two people who are maybe more mature or more understanding about each other, after this conversation, they could be like, all right, well, I see some of their points. That's not what happens here.
Right. How about this? If Sansa had just said, if I could have gone back in time and not sent that note, I would have done it. But I was a stupid, you know, like she mentioned she was a kid, but so tricky, tricky, tricky.
Well, Arya appears to be cutting her absolutely zero
right.
slack here.
Because that's Arya's personality. She wouldn't cut anybody any slack. She wouldn't have written that letter.
Right, but also, you know, she didn't. Sansa's right. She did nothing. She watched her father get beheaded. And hey, Sansa didn't do anything.
There was a very dramatic pause there.
Sansa didn't do anything because she thought Ned wouldn't be beheaded.
Right.
Arya thought he was going to be beheaded and she did nothing. So who's the one who was really the wimp there? Arya.
Ned.
Well, Ned, of course. Ned always.
Oh, we're kidding. Hey, let's go to the next scene in Winterfell. And I have to be honest, when I watched this the first time, I didn't quite realize what a smart game Littlefinger plays here.
Oh, he's so good and slimy.
He is so good about how he is getting in Sansa's head. He's like, you know, Brienne, she'd defend both daughters. She would defend both you guys.
No. But before he does he does something even smarter where he's like, are you sure? Sure Arya's not?
She's your
sister. Come on. Yeah, no,
Come
everything's
on.
Fine. I'm sure everything's fine. But if it's not. Although,
you're sure?
Sansa doesn't really seem to take this to heart based on actions she takes later on.
Well, I think she does. I think she hears Littlefinger keep saying, Brienne is sworn to both you girls. Brienne is sworn to both you girls. And so Sansa's like, okay, if she might defend Arya, I got to get her out of here.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that.
That's the way I took it. I thought Littlefinger was using a little
reverse ladder psychology.
Yeah, well,
you know what I was going to say?
Sometimes you climb down the ladder to chaos.
If he had planned it this way, but why should I say if? Littlefinger always sees all possible options.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Better than Bran, apparently.
And so, yeah, sure. He mentions Brienne, not to use Brienne against Sansa, but to take away Brienne against Arya, but to take away Brienne from Sansa. Well, this is 3D chess level activity here by Littlefinger.
Oh, yeah. It's totally, totally smart thinking. Now, I also think, going back to the books, I'm not sure Brienne will ever reach Winterfell. I think in some ways they've sent her north because the storylines they've cut from the books. And so they're suddenly like, okay, for the end game, Brienne does need to be south, does need to be with Jaime Lannister. So that's my own thought on it. And so that's another reason why when she sends Brienne away, it didn't make too much sense to me. I also love the fact Brienne, who is she kidding? Keep Pod. Keep Pod to protect yourself, Sansa.
Well, she does make a little bit of a joke there. He's become decent.
He's become
adequate.
Awkward pause. A lunger.
Well, I have to say, even though Brienne was brought up here maybe for no reason, just the fact that she's been a romantic foil for Tormund has made her this beneficial for her to be up here in the north.
Because right.
There's been a lot of good jokes about it. Some great interaction tonight about it, which we'll get to later.
So good. Sansa, you know, you keep your allies. Well, how's this saying going? Keep your allies close, but your enemies closer?
Keep your friends close.
Oh, sorry.
But your enemies closer.
Right. So is Brienne not a friend? Sansa, I think, has said a lot of smart things so far in season 7. But in this one in particular, it just doesn't make too much sense to me. She, you know, Brienne's your girl, Sansa. And so she sends her away. And then Sansa does the ultimate thing that you're not supposed to do in a sister. Go into your sister's room and start borrowing stuff.
And look at her diary.
Right. Oh, my God. No. OMG. OMSG. Oh, my seven gods. You didn't just go into my room, did you?
Do not look. And it was locked with one of those little flat golden keys.
I actually thought, even though I'm very tough on this episode, very tough on this storyline in this episode, I'm going to give it up to Maisie Williams. She makes it very tense. I was actually very tense in this scene. On my logical brain says there's no way she's going to kill Sansa, no way Sansa's going to kill her. But you put a dagger between them, and I actually did feel tense. I did feel like, oh, snap. When you see Sansa seeing these disgusting faces, oh, my God. What would Sansa think? I felt the tenseness of this scene. So I guess I'm torn. On one hand, I love that she's playing with Walder Frey's mask. I love the fact that she's freaked out. I love the tension. But because it's built on a unstable ladder, I just had trouble with it. Sorry. So this final scene, what issues did you have with it?
This seems like a forced scene. They're trying to move forward in their relationship, you know, like three steps down the line. After the conversation they had, I'm not sure, this conversation seems out of place to me.
Okay.
It seems to me that there would be a follow-up to the conversation they had before.
So how old would you say these two sisters are supposed to be in the show's timeline? You believe Sansa's like 19? I mean, this is tricky. You believe Sansa's like 18, maybe?
Yeah,
18. Or 17, now that I think about it, because in season 2, I believe she said she was 13, and she didn't really look 13 then. But if she was 13 in season 2, let's give her 16. How about that? And then how old is Arya supposed to be? That would make her probably like
13?
13, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this maybe because the actresses are older? Is that why some of the disconnect you think is happening?
I don't think it's that. I just think that there's such a sense of distrust between them that seems excessive, even considering the earlier conversation that they had. That this is really, I mean, obviously, you know, Sansa's been manipulated a little bit by Littlefinger, but the fact that she's replaced Littlefinger with Arya as the person she's most worried about in Winterfell.
Right.
It seems a little, you know, and why not, where did you get this? You know, I found it with Littlefinger. I saw Littlefinger talking to people. I mean, there's so many things that you think would be said, but can't be said.
Or it would kill the tension
and it would kill the problem. But the fact is, they have to dance around it so hard that it doesn't feel realistic.
I got you. Another thing I like about the scene is that this hot potato that's happened with this dragonglass dagger. Littlefinger's like, here, Bran, you have it. Bran's like, Arya, you take it. I'm a cripple, I don't need it. Arya's like, Sansa, here, you take it. This dagger is going to go full circle. Next week, Sansa's going to stab Littlefinger with it. You know it. You know that's the only happiness we can look forward to.
Here's one thing. If you walk into your room and someone's snooping around,
right,
and then you confront them, do you leave or do you make them leave your room?
Listen.
All right, I'll walk out. You keep snooping around.
Listen to me. You want to leave on a good, you know, drop the mic line.
Okay, all right.
And so when you drop the mic, it's awkward. What are you going to say? Why are you still here? I dropped the mic. Leave. You know, you know, so it's kind of like always leave on a laugh line. Always.
I would say take this knife with you. And don't let the door hit you with a good Lord split you.
Oh, my goodness. Just like sisters would.
Yeah.
We really need, we haven't mentioned her, Our good friend Kelly, at Kelly Underfoot on Twitter, was on last week's podcast. We need her here.
So good.
Hopefully she... I have a bunch of sisters, so I don't want to say that I can't get into this, but I do believe our lovely, loyal lady listeners, we want you to write us on our Facebook page and tell us if this is a believable fight, if this is the way it would be. Has your sister ever gone into your room? We want to know.
We want to know what they found.
Right. All right, so Catfish, now I think it's time to bring up something really tough, in that we are trying here on the Joffrey Podcast,
yes,
to break the podcast wheel. And so if something were to happen to you, I'm not going to say it is.
Okay.
But if something was to happen to you,
right,
we need to plan for the line of secession. So now,
oh, okay.
So if it's okay, I know.
Can we wait for something to happen?
No. Listen, come on. We're breaking the wheel.
Okay.
Listen, you're totally healthy, but what happens when you die?
Okay, but wait, if the wheel is broken.
You've died.
Oh, catfish. Okay. All right.
There's
okay.
No Catfish Jr.
Okay. Yeah, there is no Catfish Jr. Like Daenerys, I will never have children.
Oh,
or should I call her Danny?
Oh, you know, The last person to call me Danny was, I can't remember. Pull out the Blu-rays, Jon Snow.
So you bring up another strange conversation.
Okay.
The rest of this conversation between Tyrion, the pinky of the queen, and Queen Daenerys makes sense, talking about what they should do, their plans for going down to King's Landing.
Yeah. No, let me say,
mm-hmm.
Danny doesn't like heroes. Daenerys is like, I like you because you don't ever try to be brave, Tyrion. Tyrion's like, well, there was that one time. No, you don't. One time I literally went out the Mudgate. Yeah, Tyrion, stop ruining this point I'm trying to make. You are not a hero.
Wimp. And then she makes, as if it hasn't been enough jokes already.
Oh, no.
About how tiny Jon Snow is.
Poor Kid Harington.
Oh, man. Daenerys gets his own. He's too tiny. He is too tiny. And then she says, she compares him to Tyrion by saying, no, look, Tyrion, don't you take offense.
No.
Because Jon Snow is wee.
Right. Now, what's interesting is Tyrion brings up these men that she talks about. She talks about the heroes. Drogo, Jorah, Dario, and even this Jon Snow. Now, I think we should go through the history of the show. And mm-hmm. Do you think, I think the ghost of Hisdar is like, what about me? You were going to marry me? I went out like a hero in the...
That's why she didn't like him. She didn't like
fighting
him.
Bits? Oh, come on.
Look how Drogo go out.
What about
didn't have good antibiotics. That's what killed Khal Drogo.
What about the wine merchant? He's like, I tried to poison you in season one. I was a hero. When do I get my mention? How about the Spice King of Karth? What about me? We love you here in Karth.
I still wanted Daenerys to turn to him and sing, which one of those doesn't go with the others? Jorah.
Hey! Friend zone. That's so sad. So sad. I love the beginning part of this scene. Boy, maybe I should go higher than 6, because I love the beginning part of this scene where they are smartly thinking about meeting with Cersei. Sorry, did you want to get to something before that?
Just quick question, because the show keeps hitting on it about how much Jon Snow
checking
and Daenerys are attracted to her. Now, especially in this episode, mm-hmm. There's been a lot of longing looks from her,
yeah.
And I think there's been some good looks from her in the previous episode.
Yeah, but I haven't seen it from him.
No, that's the thing. They're almost trying to say, well, the writers are saying, well, there's absolutely no chemistry between these people, so let's just keep hitting it over the head with the writing. I've never seen him look, I mean, you know, he's
right.
Mopey all the time.
No, this is a great point. Was it last week's episode or 2 episodes ago where Davos made his joke, I've noticed you staring her at her heart. You know, and I was like, well, I haven't.
When?
When exactly?
When did that happen? So that's another weird thing that they are...
The closest it's been was cave time.
Cave time was good.
He took her hand and he led her deeper into the cave, metaphorically.
Yeah, well...
Oh, wait, sorry. No, not metaphorically. Literally, sorry. I get so confused on these.
You know, some people find you know, sunsets romantic.
Oh, yeah.
Some people find the beach romantic.
Always.
You get Jon Snow in a cave and...
So that time I saw him being a bit romantic towards her, but nobody else was there. How did they know?
No, and he hasn't looked at her in... And, I mean, I don't know if they're... They, I would rather them show us, because definitely we've seen it from her in previous episodes. It was just a little bit, but it would be magnified if we saw the same thing from him. It'd be like, oh, there's sparks there. From him, it's just, it's more mopey moperson.
Well, that's how you know he loves her.
Yeah, that's also how you know he's hungry,
wait a
how
minute.
He's tired,
hey, hold on.
How he's angry, how he's happy.
Okay, so let's get it.
Right? I want to see a picture. Okay. We need to put it up. Here's a picture. Here's my happy face. Here's my sad face. Here's my hot face.
Here's my I've been soaking wet in the freaking lake face. Let's get to the part I liked about this. Is
okay,
Daenerys says, I'm finally going to get to meet your sister. And they're planning for this. To me, I think they should plan a bit more. They should have more thoughts on this about, hey, hold on. You know, she is going to try to kill us the second we try to, probably even before we walk into King's Landing.
Well, Tyrion says, no, my brother's going to stop Cersei from doing anything sneaky.
Oh,
and I'm going to stop you from doing anything sneaky.
What? Oh, how utterly ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous.
This whole plan, this whole cockamamie plan, this whole plan to pick off one White Walker when they all travel together and bring him down. I mean, their best shot was, okay, well, he got attacked by a bear. Let's go back. He'll probably turn into a White Walker soon enough.
We learned lots of good things, but I want to focus on this plan. All I can think about is that Daenerys, when she walks into King's Landing, she should be wearing armor. She cannot take a crossbow. She's got to be, she's got to have people walking in front of her. This has got to be, you know, you don't have meetings like this. It should be via Raven. It should be, how about this? We're going to send you a White Walker in a crate on this boat. You see this, then your Raven, contact my Raven.
Yeah, right. Send, they got like a four guys in a boat. Boom. Done. Here it is. You think this is a joke? Test him out. I mean, Qyburn is going to be beside himself with joy. Like, what is this? It's a new plaything for
me. I think Frank and Gregor will be like, where are my blue eyes? You brought me back from the dead and I look like crap.
Yeah, it's a bad, it's one in a series of bad ideas.
But I love the fact they're mentioning it. Like Daenerys talking about this and saying, hey, what about this? You might not like that Tyrion's like, hey, we can't have any evil schemes. The fact that Daenerys is bringing it up proves that she is thinking the right things. Now we,
but this is a weird thing, too, that she's gone back and forth on. The very one of the first conversations she had with him this season, she varies between like saying, I trust you and you're an amazing hand, and I don't trust you and you suck.
Well, what do you think the right answer to that is? But hold on, hold on. I want to get to this other point, and that is that Daenerys and Tyrion have a little bit of disagreement here, meaning that we've seen Arya and Sansa. We've talked about that. Is this disagreement believable? One thing Daenerys keeps going back to with Tyrion is, you're trying to protect your family, aren't you? You're trying to protect your family. Are you thinking about me and not your family? Do you buy that she keeps questioning this hand? I suppose it makes sense, but...
Well, but it's just what I just said. She can either question him...
Right.
And not trust him and get rid of him, or say, I trust you. But she keeps going back and forth in the same conversations.
Yeah.
This is the second time she's had a conversation where she's like, you're horrible, you make stupid plans. The first time he kind of challenges her, she goes back to her... You know, this is like if somebody cheats on someone in a relationship and it's like, you didn't do the dishes. Well, you cheated on me. Like, she just pulls out the hammer every time she gets upset.
You didn't answer the call. All right. The next part of this scene, I almost think is spoilers. Tyrion's talking about the infamous who's going to follow you. And he starts mentioning democracies, a.k.a. the Night's Watch. They have a vote. The King's Moot from the Iron Islands. It was kind of crummy, but at least it was them picking a leader. Daenerys is already a leader who her followers have chosen. And so, is this a spoiler for the endgame? Like, who is going to follow Daenerys if Daenerys gets, which I personally don't think she will, but how is Daenerys, who's going to follow her?
Well, I completely agree with her point, and I presume they're only bringing this up to cause more conflict, but up to this point, I thought even when Tyrion's made mistakes, he had good plans.
Right.
In the book, he is, you know, this is why he's many people's favorite character, because he's misunderstood, he's maltreated, but he's smart. This makes, I am completely baffled why anyone would bring this point up now. You got an army in the north, you got an army in the south.
Especially when the previous conversation was about my sister killing you, you know?
Yeah.
And that we shouldn't do any, that we shouldn't have any hinky plans.
It feels like the writers are sort of imposing some more conflict here for a reason I don't understand, but it makes absolutely no sense to me. This was one of the jarring things that I felt in this episode.
Well, what if, I'm going to throw out a crazy pitch. Based on something that an actor said, meaning that, hey, not everything's getting resolved this season. Is there a chance that the season ends on a cliffhanger? And what if the cliffhanger is Daenerys, everybody goes to meet with Cersei. Cersei does something where Daenerys' life is threatened. And it's, we had a whole season of, is Jon Snow going to live? Could our cliffhanger next week be, is Daenerys going to live? And so they're trying to set you up for, hey, who's going to follow you if you die in the next episode?
Well, it's that seems reasonable, but it's still very clumsy.
Yeah, no,
it's clumsy for them to do this, to do this scene, to have to act it out. You know, when you're in the midst of war, you don't say what's going to happen 30 years after this war is over. And right now, if Daenerys died, whether they planned anything now or not, it wouldn't matter. Even if she died after defeating all the enemies, say they defeated all the enemies and she died 1 week later, wouldn't matter what was planned. Things would disintegrate. She's going to have to rule for years and years before things would get settled.
Well, Tyrion said that, you know, breaking the wheel is going to take forever and a day.
Right. But again,
meaning like, more books, George, more books. Yeah. Break this wheel, George.
Again, I'm not concerned how I'm going to get to work until I figure out how to fix my house that's just been flooded. I mean, you know, you're working in a problem, you know, 10 problems away, and the ones that are facing right now are important enough.
You know, Catfish,
mm-hmm.
when you're talking about tough problems, sometimes the hardest thing to do,
yes,
is nothing.
Oh, well, that is true.
And that is Tyrion's advice. Who's right in this debate? So forget if the debate makes sense or not. Who's right in this debate? Is Tyrion right? Dany, you can't go. Are you crazy? Or is Daenerys right? Hey, I've got a, these people are calling me for help. I'm a hero. I do dumb things. I hate Daenerys is like, you're not a hero. You're not me.
Well, first of all, Tyrion is completely correct.
Oh, wow.
Second of all, it shows, you know how I say I want to be shown rather than told things about the way people feel? It shows in the strongest way possible that Daenerys does care about Jon Snow.
And Jorah, to me. Don't forget Sir Friendzone.
Okay. Yeah, he was one of the ones that Tyrion mentioned, but didn't go along with the others. Yes, this is a risky proposition, something you only do if you two things. One, if she has enough hubris to think there's no danger in it whatsoever.
Which
it could
may,
be that.
Could be true. Yeah, totally.
But also the look she gets on her face, it means it's not sort of a resolute, I'm going to fix this. It's more like a, I'm afraid for wee Jon Snow.
Listen to me.
I'm listening.
You know what? Tyrion told Daenerys to do nothing before, and she listened to him. She's not doing nothing again. That is a great battle cry that Daenerys has. I'm not doing nothing again.
Listen, you're the jester of nothing, the jester of naught. That's what we should call Tyrion, the jester of naught.
Well, that could be Tyrion's big go-to move What should we do with our Dothraki army? Nothing, nothing. They'll be called foreign invaders, so do nothing. What should I do with my dragons? Well, nothing. You can't burn people to the ground. What should I do with these Tarleys? Nothing. Put them in a jail cell. Tyrion's plan is Tyrion is a fan of Seinfeld.
He's the jester of naught.
Is Daenerys making the right move? Obviously, we find out she is, but you're saying Tyrion had a point?
I'm saying if you look at it from the point of view of he's completely correct. Like, there's no reason for her to needlessly risk herself or her nuclear weapons, aka the dragons, on this enterprise. I mean, she only sort of believes in it. If she really believed in it, then perhaps she would have taken her army up there.
How about this? It could be Jon Snow setting a trap. Hey, come help us, come help us. Then you come. I got a million scorpions on top of the wall. And that's how, you know.
She's not afraid of him. He's too slight.
No. Before we leave this and go back beyond the wall, Tyrion and Dany did have a conversation again about the Tarleys. She is still defending that move. About the toasted Tarleys, the roasted Randall, and the Dick and Dust.
Right.
Tyrion is saying, stick them in a cell. What if you let the sun live? At this one moment, I did actually maybe agree with Tyrion myself about, hey, you know what? Sure, roast the dead, but keep the sun. Well, I don't know. The sun would always hate you if you kept him alive. Boy, it's so tough.
It would. I was saying that this was proof that she's becoming more like the Mad Queen, but still, if the enemies won't bend the knee, I say, you never leave the child behind to come back and seek vengeance. My name is Dickon Tarly. You killed my father. You roasted my father. Prepare to die.
They wouldn't bend the knee, so she roasted them to their knees. she got their knees. We've been very tougher on this episode than we've been on many episodes in the past. Let's get to Beyond the Wall, because Beyond the Wall, I think there's some great stuff. I think there's stuff that doesn't work, but let's try to stay positive. It may not be fun to listen to a podcast of people always slightly negative. So.
Let me say there's a lot of positive. I think they did a smart thing here where they decided, let's have some conversation between these guys. We're gonna catch up. We're gonna resolve some stuff. This is your sword. No, that's all right. I didn't deserve it. You can keep it. There's a lot of good jokes. There was about Brienne. There was a lot of, you know, as we saw people stop and talk, I thought, oh, they're really John had to do a lot of like running to catch up during these scenes because he was always stopping and talking to people while the others were just walking on.
Once again, I mentioned that last week, if last week's episode had taken up two episodes, maybe they could have put this bonding in it. So all these conversations, to me, got the episode off to a rather slow start. The first one is Gendry, man, it's so cold up here. How do you live up here? Tormund's like, you do your sex whatever you can.
Yeah, exactly. And he gives a look. He gives a look to Gendry, just like, "Whoa, man!" There's a lot of humor coming from Tormund.
Yeah, I love. You know, he's smart. He's smart. Smart people don't come up here.
Yeah, exactly. It's better if they're just strong.
Right. Exactly. Right. And we're gonna get to it in a bit. I thought so many more people would die. The fact that so many of these characters lived blew me away. I just can't believe it. You know, holy smokes. The fact that they all got away with it, it was powerful. So the next conversation up we got to talk about, Gendry's like, hey, you guys sold me to this witch who was going to kill me. And then, you know, for somebody who complains a lot, a.k.a. the Hound, he suddenly hates your winching.
You're whinging.
You're whiny whinging.
Yeah.
But you know what? The Hound has complained an awful lot. You know, he's like,
He does. But it sounds more gruff when he uses the C word all the time. It sounds less like complaining and more just like grumbling.
Right. He's got a great line. He's like, this one's been killed six times. You don't hear him bitching. But the Hound, I've heard you bitch an awful lot. Like, you have bitched about your brother putting your face in the fire, which is fair to bitch about, but you've bitched about the number of chickens you've been able to eat. You've bitched about the guy who bit you on the neck, Biter. So, you know, I'm, you know, that feels like he's a whinger. It takes a winter to know a winter is really what I'm saying.
You're right. I'm not going to call the Hound that. You go right ahead and say that to his face.
You double W.
Double W.
Whiny Winger.
Mm-hmm.
Need to man up the Hound. The next one up, we have Jon Snow and Jorah Mormont. This moment had to happen. A lot of people thought it almost should have happened in last week's episode. I knew your dad. He's a great guy. He gave me this sword. You're back. Here's the damn sword. And Jorah's just a stand-up guy. He's like, I screwed everything up. I don't deserve the sword. This is your sword, baby.
He did miss one bit, though.
What do you mean?
I mean, if it was me, I would have been like, keep the sword. I get Daenerys.
Is that his plan?
That
smart move, Jorah.
Come on now. If you're just going to give back something like that for free, how about a little deal?
I love it.
Yeah, come on.
Do it, Jorah. Beautiful. We can't talk about it enough here. You know, we're complaining about the episode a bit. Look at the money they spent. Most of this Beyond the Wall stuff was shot in Iceland. Not everything. The Frozen Lake, they actually filmed in the same quarry where the wall set is in Northern Ireland. But most of this in Northern Ireland, beautiful. These actors, because you have to recognize them, none of them have a hat. They're doing great work, I think. And so I liked this moment. I never imagined Jorah would take the sword back, but I do like it. They did need to bond before they all faced the living dead.
You know, as they were having this conversation, I thought, no, you keep the sword. No, you keep it. No, you keep it. I thought Samuel was going to rush up and grab it. I'll take it.
You know what? He would have taken the sword. He would have taken Gendry's hammer. Like every single thing. He's like, this is mine.
He just gathered up
he
in his arms.
He loves stealing Sam.
I need this for baby Sam.
The next conversation, these guys have to catch up because they haven't had time to catch up, is something that I hope what I would call show watchers, people who haven't read the books, have been able to piece together. There was the infamous Greyjoy Rebellion, which in the show's timeline happened 9 years before the events here in the books, where there was the Raid of Pyke, and Jorah and Thoros of Myr fought in that. We heard about this attack actually back in season one when Jory Cassell and Jaime talked about it in a couple episodes before Jaime stabbed his dagger through Jory's eye. But we heard about, remember Thoros of Myr charging up. We knew Jorah fought in it, so they have to connect. They have to have that moment. I thought it was good, especially since Thoros, he had a rough episode.
He did.
He starred in the great documentary Grizzly Man. But how about this conversation? Tormund and the Hound. There's so many of these wonderful, colorful characters who, you know, we could spend forever with. That Hound and Tormund. This is great. This is
so
great.
Good,
this
buddy.
Is really good.
It's a great, once again, a great buddy comedy. I mean, Tormund is funny and the Hound is funny just because he is such a whinger.
Now, is Tormund doesn't understand no means no. He's talking about, you know, I've got this woman waiting for me back. And it's a bit like, what are you talking about? Brienne isn't waiting for you at Winterfell? Are you nuts?
No, she can barely stand him, which is so great that he just doesn't even care. And he calls her a beauty. I mean, you know. And then when he describes her, the tallest woman you've ever seen, then the Hound realizes what she's talking about.
Wait a minute.
Right? And then I think they're going to have a fight over Brienne.
Well, this is great. The Hound's like, Brienne of Tarth. Tormund's like, you know her? Can you put in a good word for me? What are her digits, man? Hey, is she seeing anybody?
But Tormund backs off a little bit. Well, I mean, we're getting there.
Right, come on.
We have sort of an understanding.
He wants Brienne. Will they, since they've teased this so much, will they ever see each other again? I think if Tormund survives this, maybe he will.
No, come on. This line is so good. This line where the Hound says, like, she looks at you like she wants to carve you up. And Tormund's like, oh, yeah, you do know her. That's her. That's her. That's my lady love.
Oh, man. But Tormund, I mean, You know what? Sometimes we all imagine, yeah, after I meet Kate Upton, she'll marry me, and then we'll have babies together. I think what I just said is more believable than Torment's.
Oh, and then Torment says we'd have babies that'd be huge babies.
Yeah.
And then the Hound's like, how have you possibly lived this long? You were just out of your mind. He's good at killing.
But we needed them to have this bonding moment for when later in the episode, the Hound turns out to be a good guy.
Yeah.
Save Torment.
He's got those sad eyes. That's why.
The final bit before we get to the great bear attack is the two dead guys just shooting stuff, talking. Hey, you're dead? Yeah, I'm dead. I've been brought back 6 times. How about you? Well, just once.
Right. And then he says,
do you think there's brought back envy?
I guess when you're someone who's been brought back, that's the way you think. My only opponent is death.
Right. Well, I this actor, whose last name is Dormer, I don't think he's any relation to
Natalie Dormer,
Marjorie Tyrell. But he has a great voice. And I do love this speech he gives that, to be honest, that series has been given us since the very beginning. What did Cyrio Pharrell say? What do we say to the god of death? Not today. Like, this is the big thing. Listen, we all know we're going to die sooner or later, but you got to fight it. And so I like that moment from Thoros. And let's imagine that one of the ways Jon Snow had the strength to swim out of a frozen lake, despite the fact he's covered in a bunch of furs, was that he knows he's got to fight death.
Sure. I'll take that.
Catfish, you were just shaking your head as I was trying to pitch that as a possibility.
So then they see
the mountain shaped
really cool,
like an arrowhead.
The Hound saw it in the fire.
This is a mountain, which apparently is a real mountain there in Iceland. It's a mountain that a lot of people believe we've seen before when the Children of the Forest create the first White Walker, and they do it way back in this Bran flashback. They show this mountain in the distance, we believe, even though I don't believe that would have been shot in Iceland. And so they've been setting up this Arrowhead Formation mountain for a long time. Now, our heroes run into a very dark and scary snowstorm. They have what is the equivalent of a Star Trek red shirt leading them. How do you think this poor guy... Like, you go ahead and scout. You're our scout. Wait a minute. What?
Yeah. There were people who needed to die in this episode, so that we could lose only one, Thoros. And so those were the guys who came along.
This moment with the bear, which takes out this first red shirt, I loved it. I thought it was great. It was, to be honest, looking at the counter, this is almost half an hour into the episode. And for one, that this is my own expectations, blame me. I'm expecting so much action. There really had been nothing but talking for the first 28 minutes. This bear showed up. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Great moment. The guy's running away from the bear. The bear pulls a velociraptor on him, attacks him from his side, pulls him away. Oh, hell yes. Loved it.
Yeah, this bear attack was very, very exciting.
Form up in a circle. Let's do this. We can't see anything. Great hero moment. When we have what I'm assume is a mix of practical and digital bear effects comes down, and he's like, it's time for me to thin this herd. So good. How would you kill a gosh damn white bear? And I mean white, W-I-G-H-T.
Well, what you'd have to do is you have to do the trick where you light your swords on fire.
Hell yeah. That's how you killed the whites back at Castle Black. Light their ass up. Let's go. Thoros does a great job. He gets that bear going. The Hound still with this fire fear. Admittedly, if you've got a great big dead bear coming at you with a lid on fire, that adds to his fear. Great moment. Thoros steps in and saves the Hound. And then he sticks his sword into the bear's mouth. So the bear is trying to bite him, eat some delicious Thoros. Thoros is fighting him off as best he could until... Once again, he becomes Grizzly Man until he becomes the Revenant. Bear fight.
You got to love a bear fight. I do believe that bear was having intercourse with him, just like they said on Fox.
Everybody comes up. Jorah gets in. People are hacking and slacking. Everybody but the Hound. He's got this one issue. How is the Hound going to do around dragons since he has this issue with fire? he's willing to get on one because he knows his life.
You know, when it comes to a certain point where you realize, you know what, fire is not the thing to be most afraid of.
No.
Now, I thought Thoros here was done.
I thought he was done, too.
I thought he was done. They're just going to stitch him up, a.k.a. seal his wounds with a flaming sword, get him up on his feet. Let's go, buddy. Toughen up.
Right. Is it
nut up.
Cauterize? How do you cauterize?
Cauterize a wound, yeah.
Yeah, like that is... This is the most painful way to have it done. You know, when you want to prove you're a man, take a sip of rum so that you've got that in your lungs when they light them on fire. And that has got to be painful.
And I was thinking the thing we heard later, like, Dondarrion's like, he got to be afraid to have Thoros die. Thoros is the only one who could bring him back.
Right. Whoops-a-days. Thoros, good point. He's like, you know. Hey, I just got bit by a dead bear. What a great story I'll have to be able to tell around the bar. Aw, he'll never... That bar in Seven Heavens, he'll be able to tell it at. But I thought he was dead, too. When they pull him up and let's go, hey, let's keep going. You got to be thinking to yourself, can I rest a bit? I just got freaking eaten by a freaking dead bear.
Can I get a hand here? No. You got to walk yourself.
Love this moment they think about. All I can think about is, dude... The red shirt who's died,
yeah,
he might come back from the dead, but hey, let's do something to get these bastards near us. So they light him on fire as a trap. Roasted wildling ranger trap.
Didn't they know that if someone is killed by a White Walker, that they become a White Walker? Why don't they just say, all right, we got him. We got our White Walker.
Hold on for a minute. Jon Snow... and Tormund, they both saw the Night King raise his hand, and that's when the dead came back. That's how it was presented at Hardhome. So you're right. They almost feel like they needed to put this dead guy on a rope really far away, get him close to the Night King. Night King brings him back, and then, all right, pull him in, guys. Pull him in. We got him.
That's a good plan.
Love this shot of them looking down at the marching army of the dead. I love that. I'm going to assume this is still in Iceland, too. This is beautiful, man. Look at this. Whoa. And it's just one White Walker. Why are they separate? Do you think the Night King knows what's going down? Why? Any reason why this one straggler group were getting pulled in? Or were they just... Maybe I'll explain it myself. When Jon Snow kills this White Walker, so many in the group die, meaning this White Walker turned them. So... maybe this guy was out getting troops. This guy was getting troops.
Right. At least the way he seemed to be armored, this guy was at least a sergeant, maybe a captain White Walker.
Right.
Right. So he's not just a bum.
To be honest, he's thinking to himself while he fights Jon Snow, I'm due for a promotion. Don't kill me. He killed me.
So that is a really, really cool thing that happens. No, is that, you know, now we learned White Walkers are like vampires.
Great call. Exactly right. You kill the head vampire, all the people he's turned fall and drop dead. I love this fight.
But it also seems to be like a pyramid scheme, right? Because whoever turned that guy who turned those guys, if you got the guy above him, it would get all the people he turned. And then it would get this guy, and then would get his. So you really want to go to the top.
I don't know why I'm thinking of this. I'm thinking of this as a white WTD. Like, this person gave it to this person.
WDD. I thought it was like a white Herbalife.
But then, okay, so there's one remaining zombie, one member of the dead.
Apparently he went out with him. He didn't get turned by that guy.
Right, they've circled him. And yet, it didn't feel like they really had a great plan for, okay, we've circled him. Where's the cage? How are we going to do this? They're letting him scream. That also wasn't a smart plan. Ugh. They finally throw a bag on his head. They give him
doesn't stop him from making his noise.
I know.
It's the mating call of the whites.
And this is nothing but trouble. I have to be honest, when they sent Gendry off all alone, I thought, uh-oh. That's a bad sign. You don't want to be alone when the S hits
F.
And this, I love the White Walkers. I love them as an awesome villain. So many people, other podcasts I've heard talk about how, ooh, I don't like the White Walkers. I want the big bad. You know, I like it better human against human. And then they say this, and they rank their favorite battle, and Hardhome's always number one. I understand wanting it to be human versus human, but I also like it being even fighting. We just saw a couple episodes ago, in a great fight, the dragon wiped out the Lannister forces. So I love routes too. But the fact that now there could be equal fighting between, quote-unquote, the living and the dead, that excites me. And I'm always enjoyed the Night King. His version of trash talking, so good.
Yeah, now there, this is kind of a cool bit here too, where, you know, they go out on the ice and they're like, oh, we can't go, that it's breaking. And then just like the choice
right.
that the Hound made between right. fire and getting up on the dragon, they're like, let's get the F into the center of this ice. Luckily, there's a little island there. And then there's the cool bit where, like lemmings, the White Walkers, it takes them a little while to realize, let's not just walk right into the water.
Love it. Love it so much. Having said that, when they're on this frozen lake, but the lake, you know, can crack and stuff, all I could think was that Thoros, Beric, light up your damn flaming swords. Let's burn this freaking ice. Let's keep melting it. We need it to be melted.
Well, I think that they put them out in the snow. So maybe if they put it in the ice, it would just go out.
Okay, well, just hold it above the ice. You've got to melt this. You got to do something, man. You got to melt this ice. You are surrounded by a frigging enemy.
That is like trying to use a Betty Crocker oven to cook a 12-pound turkey.
Dude, they're coming at me. These killers want my...
Guys, can you hold up? It's going to take me about 4 days to melt this ice.
This light bulb in this Betty Crocker oven. So Gendry is running back.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why. I did have a fear of like, uh-oh, he's going to, you know, these White Walkers, they've got a great divide and conquer. I thought
Except
he was going to run.
Except you knew that he was going to get back because there's no way that we were going to lose Jon Snow, the Hound, Beric Dondarrion, Jorah Mormont.
No, I thought there was at least a chance. I thought there was at least a chance that Jon would be the only one to survive because of the infamous, from the books, the last hero myth, which shows the last hero was the last hero because everybody else died. I thought there was a chance we would lose everybody. I was very afraid.
Oh, okay.
Bit of awkwardness because, hey, we need this gosh darn raven to reach Daenerys. Is they hang out on this island forever. The White Walkers, they don't need food. They don't need anything. They're just going to stand there and taunt you. They are taunting you as you freeze to death. Oh, how about this? You got to burn Beric. Sorry, you got to burn Thoros because he's dead. Put him near the lake so he falls to lake.
Oh, you're full of great ideas.
Listen to me. I am on Thaw Watch 2017. Let's do this.
Yeah, light him up. Spin him around.
I love this moment of Jon Snow. So there is so much in this that I do love. Jon Snow prevents the Hound from drinking. He's like, no, we got to burn this mofo. We need to light him up hardcore. They pour the liquor on our boy Thoros, burn him. He's not going to turn. But they are just totally, well, maybe that's how they stay warm throughout the night.
Oh, there's a good point. And a little bit of food, maybe.
Terrible. Would you eat after a bear ate something? Come on. Do you want to give an RIP?
He's already been charred a little bit previously.
Do you want to give an RIP for Thoros? Are you sad to see Thoros roast?
I had Thoros down as not likely to live very long. So, you know, he's, like I said, he was one of those people we'd seen before, so we care a little bit about, and I suspected that those kind of people would perish on this mission.
Jon Snow, they've got this annoying wight that they've captured who just keeps making noise. They know the water's going to freeze. The way Jon Snow walks up to the lake, though, I thought, is he going to use the restroom? But no, he and Jorah are just having a moment where they talk these things out. They're like, okay, why did all the whites die? I think this is a great point. So, you know, it's a bit like Independence Day. You know, you kill the one mothership, everybody dies. We do that, we're good. A bit like the Star Wars prequel, The Phantom Menace. We blow up the droid control ship.
Yeah, no worries. We just got to get one of those right now. And they remind us, as if it wasn't bad enough, that, no worries, guys. We sent a raven to right. Dragonstone. It's going to get there.
It'll be here.
And we're all going to be saved. Except now, for Thoros.
Now, my boy, the Night King, he drove me a bit crazy.
Did he?
He can freeze so much. Why didn't he brings the storm with him, brings the cold with him. Why doesn't he just go freeze this darn lake? You know, what's he doing? He off up on his literal high horse.
And why is he saving his mighty whitey spear for the dragon? Why not just take these guys on one at a time?
Oh, I thought at one point he was going to be like, you know, I've killed the dragon. Now it's time to kill the Messiah, Jon Snow.
Yeah, so all the time they're having these conversations, etc., it just seems kind of a little ridiculous to me. They're clearly all waiting.
We're waiting as an audience.
And we don't know why the king is waiting.
The Night King.
The Night King.
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant Jon Snow.
Yeah. Except you had a great idea.
Yeah, I did.
So tell me your great idea about what's really going on here is we're not seeing Jon Snow's plan in effect. We're seeing the Night King's plan in effect.
Right. He's like, you know what? These idiots have just sent a raven. So they'll bring me some fresh meat. Did you like that the Hound has like his own beef with this one skeleton?
Oh,
I like this skeleton. This is a good skeleton.
It's a funny bit.
He's throwing rocks.
But I knew exactly what was going to happen here.
Oh, yeah.
I knew exactly he was going to throw a rock, and then it was going to be like, oh, who's the dumb sea now?
But I love this skeleton. I love, you know, there's so many zombies, so many people. But this skeleton, he's cool. I don't know how he still has blue eyes, but he's like, oh, hey, guys, we can walk on this. To be honest, I thought they should have been doing this from the very beginning. You're like, hey, all of us can't walk at once.
Is that what they were waiting for? That's the only thing. Is that what they were waiting for? It seems like the Night King was telling them, just hang out, guys. Nap. Stand up. Nap. Like horses. Just stand up and nap. But apparently these guys were just waiting for something.
Oh, man. And so slowly, one by one, the Night King, he's sending them out one by one. Why? Because he doesn't want them to crack the ice. But this is a moment when our heroes are screwed. We have wanted to see this battle. We want to fight the real trouble. And so our heroes do a great job. A shockingly good job, I have to be honest, because I thought so many people would die and maybe a red shirt dies. But they do a great job. When Tormund survives, it is a true miracle. And they do a great job. I want to keep complimenting the show. They do a great job of making you think he's going to die. I fell for it. I felt like, okay, he's getting a hero's death here.
Yeah, I really thought that the one person I was worried the most about really was Tormund. They made you believe. I thought, oh, he'll never be able to see his mountain lady love.
That's all that kept him alive. And the Hound wants them to be together. The Hound is a shipper. It's a Torren shipper, or a Bromund shipper. And so he's like, I got to save this cunt.
Yeah, that was a cool moment. And like you said, you know, they set it up earlier. And so even while that scene was funny and entertaining in its own, it sets this up. So... yeah, that was very exciting.
And one thing that, okay, so I've been complimenting this a lot, but I did only rate it a 6. And this is where I went to the director. So many of these battles, because just to say it again, a lot of battles I've loved have been just pretty much wipeout defeats. There's no way you can survive. And so in all of these battles, they love to have somebody surveying the field and realizing all hope is lost. They've done it in a million battles I've liked. For whatever reason, when Jon Snow has them evacuate and go even higher up on this little island, he's saying, fall back, and he's pulling there. We got to keep the white we have as our proof. We got to keep the white. the moment where Jon Snow looks around, where it goes slow-mo, you know, I just wasn't down with this at all. I didn't feel the emotion that I should have. Maybe because I knew the dragon ex machinas were coming. But
For me, it was too much of the, for example, in the Battle of the Bastards, when Jon Snow is about to get run over and then those other things happen, you're like, wow, that's literally at the last second. The way this, and I hadn't given the director a hard time up to this point, but my problem with this is it seems you can't sell the last second for like 5 minutes, which they did here.
Oh, good point.
There was two, there was like, they were so close for so long, you just couldn't buy that they could keep them off. It was the last second for 5 minutes. That's so I lost it because the battle became, you know, they're trying to heighten it and it just became too ridiculous. Like they wouldn't have been overcome by that point.
No, I completely agree. Now, having said all that, when this trope has happened so many times in Game of Thrones, when in the Battle of the Bastards, the Knights of the Vale show up at the last minute, as you kind of know they would, I still got into it. I still bought into the, okay, we're losing this battle. Okay, they're coming to rescue us. I love it. When Stannis' army came and saved Jon Snow and the Wall from the Wildling attack at the last minute, I'm still down with it. And I'll be honest, when these dragons showed up, even though I had so many problems with the episode, I wanted to scream, all right, let's do this. Let's go. I was like, I'm ready. Let's do this.
I mean, the point where Tormund backs up into Jon Snow, that to me has got to be, that is the final last moment. And then it goes on from there.
Oh, Beric.
So that's I guess, the problem that I have is that I got to the point where I could no longer suspend my disbelief about the fight. So when the dragon showed up, I'm like, I guess these guys could have fought another 10 minutes this way. I mean, it's just, you know, do they really even need the dragons?
Right.
But I mean, the dragons were cool, and the way they blowed stuff up was awesome.
Loved it. Daenerys obviously might have made a mistake bringing all three, but I still was like, hell yeah, let's go. These dragons, they know how to use their fire shooter because our heroes are totally safe. They didn't get singed at all in this great, awesome dragon-esque machina. Come kick ass. Hell yeah. Daenerys, she's not even wearing a hat.
Yeah. I would think you'd want to dress because it's cooler up in the air even. Her tootsies have to be freezing.
Right. That's why Jorah's like, I'll sit next to her. One of the things that's in the book that's so big is about, okay, who can ride a dragon? Who can ride a dragon? Apparently, everybody can ride a dragon if they're just passengers. But the seating might be uncomfortable, but I've flown Delta before, so I know.
Well, that would make sense. Now, here, where I understand at the beginning that Jon Snow is protecting people.
As they climb up on this dragon, yeah.
Why does he keep fighting them?
Great question.
After?
Well, I think so he steps away, and he's yelling, go. It's like some people have argued Jon Snow has a death wish. And it is like he has a death wish because there's no point.
But the point that
everybody's rescued.
He can get up on the dragon. The dragon can turn his head and and wipe those people out. Wipe out way more whites than he can.
Right. But they need to get out of there. They need to go. And Jon Snow, in some ways, maybe Jon Snow gets this other because he's Dickon around. R.I.P. Dickon. But I even love the Night King. Rather than go for the dragon, which is on the ground relatively close, he goes for an air shot. Oh, my God. Do you know which dragon this is? I'm going to say it's is it the green one that gets it? This is a Viserion. So it's Viserion that gets it. Viserion that is stabbed. Incredible. The books have a prophecy called The Dragon Has Three Heads. And it's always implied that there have to be three dragon riders. Well, if one of them's the Night King, that's incredible.
Whoa.
This is crazy. I don't think
so. You're saying because Jon is Targaryen, he can ride one. Daenerys can ride the
Maybe
other.
Maybe he could name the one named after his father, Rhaegal. Sure. But the fact that Viserion died, they do a great shot of everybody looking. Daenerys is crying, but she's got to go. Once you realize, oh, crap, we're not all powerful, hit the friggin' road. And Jon Snow, what are you doing?
Well, I have no idea what he's doing. This is like he's going to go kill the Night King right away.
Yeah.
There's go. No way.
Go. Why not? Why not run up there and kill him? Why not do anything? You are so crazy. I think a part of him I could accept. Okay, he got angry that a dragon died, and so he wants to, you know, so he's going to step away towards the Night
but
King.
But now he's running towards the dragon. Why did he run away from the it's you know, all they do it is because they knew how much we liked it when Jaime drowned but then lived. And they thought, you know what? Let's double down on that.
Right.
Jaime was in some heavy wear, but let's put, since John's in lighter stuff, let's have him go in freezing cold water and come out of it.
Right.
Suck on that, viewers.
So my boy's javelin throw didn't get Drogon. It almost got Jorah to fall off. This is in some way something I should be loving. Our heroes are flying away all on a dragon. They have escaped. I should love this. But the ridiculousness of Jon Snow falling into the water, because I know he can't die that way. I know Jon Snow can't die that way. I didn't feel the tension the scene wants me to have.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't have the tension for anybody else except for Tormund. I thought for a moment they might finally kill Tormund, but I wasn't afraid of most people actually dying in the scene where you thought it might just be John. I didn't
John living.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That John would be the only one living.
So they have this beautiful shot. It's beautifully composed, Alan Taylor, of Longclaw just on the ice. Jon Snow gets himself out of the water. This is actually more believable than Jaime's thing from a week ago.
I don't think so.
No, it is more believable, but it's still not believable. Like, in other words, it's not believable, but it's still more believable than it had been. Why not just have, since we have a Benjen ex machina too, why not just have Benjen pull him out of the water?
No, Benjen can only show up after Benjen waits until there's...
After tragedy, right.
Yeah, right.
Once Benjen's some like, tragedy is
Benjen's
happened.
Benjen's like, is Hodor dead? Okay, I'll show up.
So Jon Snow, he pulls himself out of the water. He's dying of hypothermia.
He's dripping wet. Dripping right. wet. By the time he was on that horse for like 5 minutes, he would be frozen solid at those clothes.
It's a good way to go. That's what they've heard. It's the best way to go. But who shows up? Uncle Benjen. Benjen, I don't know. Benjen, how about we give Benjen some dragon glass? He goes undercover under the Army of the Dead, and he kills the Night King.
Oh.
He's not going to get that chance. He's not going to get that chance, but he is going to get the chance to once again ride in and save some people at the last minute with his awesome flaming ball of fire.
Yeah, and then he says, get on that horse and ride.
Why doesn't he go? He goes, hey, let's both of us get on the horse and ride. No, of course we can't do that. You go. I'm going to stay here. And like you were just doing
he says,
a martyr
come
act.
With me. There's no time. In the time that he said there's no time, he could have got up on the damn horse.
Maybe the horse couldn't carry.
Maybe he thought the horse would be too slow.
Right, with when one we know wet, that, soaking like, wet person on
in 5 minutes, frozen solid. If Jon Snow had been a father, he would have been a popsicle.
Jon Snow turns back and sees his uncle, somebody he hasn't seen since the third episode of the series. You know, once again, go out a bit like a hero, like Hodor. He's trying to hold the door. He's trying to fight
this
like
is,
he can.
This is
good
a,
work, Benjen. R.I.P.
Benjen. This is a Benjen ex machina. For those people
yeah, I call
who
it
didn't...
I call it a triple B.
Triple B.
Benjen, bye-bye.
For those people who didn't read the books, where I feel like there's a little bit more of Benjen in the books.
A little bit more.
But he is that strong connection. You really feel, I mean, they right. cover it, the connection between him and John. They do cover it in the first season, but you really feel like he's really on John's side. So you can have a little bit more feelings about it here. I wonder if people who just watched the show think, oh, this schmuck shows up to save, It is a Vengeance Ex Machina.
All right. So, our heroes, we never know what happened to Gendry. Do we see Gendry again? I can't remember, but...
No, he's fine.
Yeah, well, no, I know he's fine, but we see the Hound throw this evil zombie into one of the rowboats so that they're going to leave. Beric and Tormund are staying behind at the wall. Man, if you're Tormund, do you want to stay at the wall? What a terrible, terrible mistake.
Well, where else are you going to go?
I know he likes the wind at the wall. I know he likes the air up north. But dude, you just saw what happened. You've seen two ass kickings, Tormund. It's time to hit the road.
And then we see that, unbelievably, if I did not know that Jon Snow is riding back, I would be like, what is she, a moron?
You mean Daenerys at top of the wall?
Daenerys cannot in any way expect Jon Snow to come back. And yet,
Jorah's telling her it's time to go, but then we hear the single horn blast. The single horn blast means double R. Ranger returning. And this, why did we do it? Just let Jon hop on the dragon and let him escape too. Oh my goodness gracious. Ah, frustrating.
It is. He was going to come back anyway, and we wouldn't have had to have the Benjen Ex Machina. I mean, if they were saving Benjen for this moment, it was not necessary. Hmm. We didn't need to see Benjen again if we were going to see him just for that. Jon could have gone.
Well, I think we did need to see him. All right, so I think this is Gendry on the boat. So they're stripping Jon Snow. Gendry said, well, if this is how you keep warm in the north, let's strip Jon Snow's body of clothing.
And then Daenerys sees what Jon Snow has been, for some reason, denying for a few episodes. And that is
His abs.
Yeah. Is that he is a human strainer.
He has taken some hardcore stabs. Now, this moment, this bonding together... Jon Snow, once he finally wakes up, he says he's going to bend the damn knee. We've had this debate for so long. When he first arrived, I said he was a bit like Mance. He wakes up and he's like,
"Yeah, we did not talk about that comes out of directly out of a conversation he had with Tormund
right.
earlier that you know, that Mance didn't bend the knee and people died and it was stupid.
Right.
People died.
Yeah, a handful of people died. A handful of people died here. We had several red shirts. We had Thoros of Myr. They died.
Yeah.
John just bended mother.
But John, you know what I got to say? Even though he's mopey, he knows the right thing to say, right? He opens his eyes. The first thing he says is, I'm sorry for your loss, baby.
Right. Well, any way Daenerys would blame him for the death of one of her children? That's a big emotional moment, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she could. I think she's well within her rights to. I mean, she blames Tyrion for a bunch of stuff, right? I mean,
but she's staying strong. She's saying thank you. You know, I needed to see this, and she's come around. She lost a child to this mofo Night King, and she says, "Listen to me, we're gonna defeat it. We're gonna take it down.
But first, we're gonna go down to King's Landing."
Right.
And they seem to have at least a moment there once again where Daenerys is kind of making eyes at Jon and Jon is making his usual face.
He's trying. Man, the guy almost died. Let him not flirt at this moment, Danny.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. And why does he think he can call her Danny? He just killed one of her kids. He got one of her kids killed. No. It's not the right time to start making up nicknames. Mm. How about, you know what? What if he said, how about if I call you Double D?
Double D?
Delicious Daenerys.
Heck
Boom.
Yeah. But still not when she just lost one of her kids.
Now, how about this? She seems to be very warm and friendly to him. Until she realizes he's weak just like everyone else. He's going to bend the knee. And then, oh, this is going to be a professional relationship then. I'm taking my hand away. You know what? He gave up his strength in the relationship. And Daenerys doesn't like it.
This should be a real bonding moment for them. What the hell they just lived through. It didn't connect with me. I hate to be so tough on it. There was a lot in this episode I liked. But it just didn't connect with me. You know, Daenerys is almost tearing up here. Maybe I could have used some more of Ramin Djawadi's incredible score. I didn't feel it in my gut. That's why I'm so tough on this episode. This season has been so great, but this moment, just tough.
Well, I think it's partly because, I mean, we had the conversation with Tormund earlier. She came to see him. She understands the problem now. I don't think she just said, they killed one of my kids, so you understand? This is my fight now.
Yeah.
And then he says something that he doesn't need to say because he doesn't need to bend the knee anymore for her to be involved in this.
He still should have. I mean, just do it. Dude, you need these dragons. Now let's cut to the final scene. Now,
speaking
Catfish,
of dragons,
let's talk about it. What did you take from this final scene? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Somebody's dredging the lake for something. It's the Night King pulling out a dragon.
Who carries these chains around?
Look, he's got a lot of bitches. He's like, hey,
these are heavy looking chains.
I've got? Oh, I love this moment. Love this moment. I think everybody, once they thought about this, they would have thought, oh, yeah.
You thought about it in the middle. You're like, you better burn that dragon.
I did. But I think the effects work on this is an incredible effect when they're pulling this dragon out. And I have to be honest. Last year, I read something on Reddit, so I wasn't sure if it was true. But sure enough, it spoiled the entire Battle of the Bastards for me. This year, I actually tried to stay away from... you know, spoilers as much as I could.
Especially it was tough this week.
Yeah,
This episode itself got spoiled, and I saw something that I didn't want to see.
This had been rumored. This is one of the things I heard people talking about, and I just thought to myself, how could it be? But it also just seemed too good to be true. The Night King having a dragon. Oh, snap. As tough as I am on this, this really levels the fight. Here we go. Giddy up. Trouble, 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 man. That ice wall is coming down. If that ice wall has some magic in it, well, I've got a mother friggin' Puff the Magic Dragon. Viserion the Magic Dragon who's going to take
it
down.
This dragon, does it blow fire or frozen
ice
water?
I love it.
Right? I mean, what is it?
Night King.
Now, this is going to make something a little bit more difficult as well, is that if they're in a place where Gendry could have run back in time to send a raven, that means that presumably it would be hard to believe, I'd be shocked if the Night King wasn't past the wall at the end of next episode.
It's coming, don't you think? It's got to come.
Yeah.
He's got Viserion, the frozen dragon, the ice dragon. So good.
Well, and then
Catfish, I want you to say it. Do you love the ice dragon, yes or no?
Love the ice dragon.
Okay,
I love the ice dragon, but I was thinking, so now Jon Snow and his forces of Daenerys, all they need to do is get south of King's Landing.
Oh, that would be so good.
Look, guys, we're just going to go around. Don't worry about it. There's no White Walkers or anything. You just hang out. You just stay here.
Love it, love it.
They should go to Dorne, Westeros' vacation spot.
Yep, I would enjoy that to heck. Catfish, there's only one episode left. How is this possible? How is it possible that this season's going to end and then we've got the longest night ever, a year? Over a year and a half to wait for the final.
A year and a half.
It's not coming out till 2019, dude.
Oh, man.
They're going to start filming season 8, the final season, in October.
Okay.
As you've mentioned, I forget if you've mentioned it on the podcast, those final 6 episodes might be 90 minutes each. It's going to take them a while. HBO needs to keep these subscribers around for as many years as possible. So like they did with Sopranos, I think we've got a year off next year. Oh, that's going to be painful.
Wow. Okay. So it's coming. Winter is coming. And once the White Walkers get over the wall, winter is here.
Hell the heck yeah. Catfish, next week we are going to have the final episode, and it is going to be supersized. Not only are we going to be giving away this wonderful prize, but this next episode is currently, doesn't have a title yet. During the week we'll get a title, but it's HBO says it's going to go for an hour 25.
Wow.
This is...
Wow.
We're getting our money's worth. They are giving us... I'd love another episode so some of these plot lines don't rush so fast. They're giving it to us. I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited too. I'm curious to think, to see how I'll feel throughout the week as I digest everything that's happened. I feel like I haven't let some little problems get in the way of my enjoyment. You know, I've given some really high ranking to some episodes this year, even though the travel around has been ridiculous, and what with Jamie, et cetera. But this week, it did, at least for this up to this point.
Right. Hopefully they can turn it around. Hopefully they can turn it around, because I've given sevens before. I gave a 10 to the third episode this season. I gave a 9 to the fourth episode. Last week an 8. This week down to 6. I hope this is a low point with a lot of highs in it.
I agree.
So for everyone here...
Oh, wait, hold up a second.
Wait, hold on. Yeah.
Every week on the
Every
Joffrey
week.
Podcast...
Yes.
We have to honor our namesake, Joffrey. And how do we honor him?
I can't imagine how. By ending the podcast after an hour and a half.
No.
That's good.
We name our Joffrey of the week someone who has embodied...
Yeah.
The wonderful, one or many of the wonderful qualities of Joffrey. So, for this week, I had two choices. The first one was I went to go see Atomic Blonde. Okay. And as we know, anyone who's trying to be blonde at this point is trying to emulate Joffrey. And in
Obviously.
Atomic Blonde,
yeah.
Someone who is from the Game of Thrones universe said, I have to be an Atomic Blonde because I love blondes. And that is the actor that plays Randall Tarley is an Atomic Blonde. However...
Yes.
That was superseded by the fact today I went to go see Logan Lucky.
Oh, boy. That's great. So just don't spoil me on it because I want to see
Okay.
It.
The only thing I'll say two things.
Wait, you're going to spoil it.
Okay. Yes. There is a conversation about Game of Thrones in the movie that is the funniest thing in the movie.
Oh, wow.
And number two, because they were having that conversation, Daniel Craig, who's in the movie, said, to make me greater in this movie, you also must dye my hair pure white blonde like Joffrey Baratheon. So
wow.
Daniel Craig, he is my Joffrey of the week. What about you, Bubba?
Okay, so my Joffrey of the week,
mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about this all week long.
I know you have. You always put a lot of time into this.
And yet, there's one guy who is really trying to break the wheel, like Joffrey broke the wheel.
Right? He broke the wheel over some people, but yes.
Joffrey was the real wheel breaker, but I think the Night King is really going to break some balls. Just like Joffrey, the Night King doesn't strike until the absolute last moment.
Right.
You know, Joffrey went undercover, faked his death to get the real usurpers. Still hasn't revealed himself because it's like too soon. He was
the Night King leads from behind.
Just like Joffrey.
Also very good with ranged weapons.
Love
just like
it.
Joffrey.
Right. Can't handle a crossbow like Joffrey, so he's like, I'll throw this little ice toothpick. And the Night King, the final thing.
Yes.
Man, a few words. And so, in his honor, I won't say anything else.
All right, well, there you go. You got two choices, Daniel Craig or the Night King.
We have been very tough on this episode. Every listener, I tell you, I hope it wasn't annoying listening to people bag on an episode. I hope you loved it. I hope we're the outliers. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/PPodcast. Let us know what you think. And write as long as you want, because we may have a year and a half before we really get resolution to some of this stuff. For everybody here on the Joffrey Podcast, my name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And I'm Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGman67.
You'll hear us next time on
The Joffrey of Podcasts.
Deus Ex Machina Edition.
The only way we can stay warm here in the north is to start screwing everything in sight, Gendry.
You got a pretty mouth.